Welcome to the Women and Money Cafe, the weekly podcast for women by women, exploring the practical and emotional side of money with your hosts, independent financial advisors and certified financial coaches, Julie Flynn and myself, Catherine Thomas-Humphrey.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Women and Money Cafe podcast. Now today, I'm joined by Catherine and Michelle and Emily, and we're talking about the subject of family legacy. And what we're looking at today is just the dynamics of what's going on with our relationship with our family or with our friends when it comes to passing money on through the generations. And as you would expect, this can be quite an emotive subject. So today, what we're going to do is we're just going to talk through some of the observations that we've seen with the people that we work with, but also just giving you some hints and tips on how to kind of approach this subject within your family or within your circle of friends, if that's relevant. So hopefully you'll find this interesting and useful and helpful. And as always, we love hearing from you. So do get in touch with us. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Women and Money Cafe podcast. And on this episode, we're talking with my co-host, Julie Flynn, and our cafe experts, Michelle Lamble and Emily Poole, all about family legacies. And we're looking in particular about how we maybe expect an inheritance, what to do if we don't feel we've had the right one, which can be an awkward conversation. Should we have one anyway? And do they always need to be equal? So I'm going to throw open to Julie to begin with, because Julie, as you know from previous episodes, works with people who've lost their partner. And I think she's got some really great stories to share in and around this. Julie, what are your first thoughts?
I think the first thoughts are, it's like with anything, the earlier we can start having conversations about things like this, then the better it is for everybody involved. I think money is a contentious subject. We all know that, don't we? Like, emotions can run high when money's involved. And when you throw into the mix the loss or the potential loss of a family member, you've just ramped up the emotion level even more. And do any of us make really good decisions when we're in that place? I suspect not. So I think just from my personal experience, I've seen lots of different things. I've seen it go really well. I've seen it upset people and cause distress. And I think my observation is it's having the conversation and being open. But that's easier said than done, isn't it?
I think it is. And I think some of the issues we see actually happen well before that loss occurs. I don't know whether you guys agree, but when I was advising on equity release, this was a topic that came up quite a lot, in that we feel you have to involve family members and beneficiaries because potentially they're the ones who feel, whether they are right or wrong is irrelevant, but they're the ones that feel they may then be losing what they potentially perceive to be an inheritance for them. So that conversation really could be happening 10, 15, 20, 25 years earlier. And then we've got inheritance tax planning as well. So, Emily, I know that this is a topic that was passionate for you. What are your opening thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, some of these matters that will pop up today, I'm sure, are ones that that popped up when we talked about wills, Catherine. And I think the problem is, going back to what Julie said about how people don't tend to make very good decisions at those points where you're very close to death or just after death or those kind of very stressful times in your life. It's, for me, the estate planning is so important in order to keep your family together after you've gone, because it really is a moment where families can fall apart. But I think if you employ a bit of forward thinking and speak to your families early enough, you know, I'm talking way, way earlier down the line, give people an expectation of what it is that might be left when they've popped off, but make sure that they know that there are no guarantees. And that needs to be done before someone's even ill. So that's why it's important to be putting your will in place at a youngish age and talking with your adult children at a time that they're mature enough to understand and appreciate what you're going through. But yeah, I've just seen too many families fall apart after a death because they haven't received what they were expecting to receive, or you know, even before, in the really latter years of a parent's life, children can get angry about the fact that they might be going on the odd cruise, or, you know, might be enjoying life a little bit too much because they see that as skiing, spending the kids' inheritance. So it's just being really open and having that discussion early enough.
That's some really interesting words I heard you say there, Emily. And one of them that jumped out to me was this idea of expectation. It's in our generation, I don't know if you see this as well, it feels like we expect to inherit as though somehow this is a tradition. But then you only need to go back one or two generations to see that that tradition didn't actually exist. My parents didn't inherit. They started from scratch. Their parents started from scratch. And that's not to say it's wrong, but it does strike me as unusual that an expectation has come in. I mean, if my dad was on a cruise, I'd be saying, take your friends, because I've seen him work so hard and I would rather he enjoyed. But that's obviously my perspective, and it's going to be different in different families. And that difference is, I think, says that there isn't a right or wrong way. Emily?
Yeah, I think that you're quite right. I think obviously there's different levels of wealth, and in some families where there's always been wealth that's inherited and passed down the generations, obviously, you know, that's a different story. There is that expectation. I think what you're talking about there is a sort of more middle tier of wealth where there's normally enough for somebody to build and have a reasonable life during their lifetime. But then let's face it, longevity now means that we're spending a lot of that wealth after we've stopped working. So there isn't always going to be very much left. But I think the expectation has come within our generation because our parents were the real beneficiaries of the baby boom years. They're the ones that now have the property wealth, the wealth that has really, really increased, you know, during their lifetimes because of their ownership of property.
Mm. So that's a shift that you're seeing within our generation based on differing levels of wealth. Can I just go back to that first one where you said where there's been larger wealth in families that has passed down? Don't you feel that those conversations are already happening?
You would hope so. You would hope that that is ingrained in that kind of family where they have a very good advisor, and that that advisor is good at engaging the next generation and bringing them in. I think that there is a view amongst the high net worth inherited wealth that they are custodians for that estate. They use it during their lifetime, but it's also their job to grow it. And if they're doing it right, they should be using an advisor that's helping them grow it. And then they are engaging the next generation in the conversations, hopefully. But it's the next tier down where it's not traditionally a wealthy family. It's maybe a generation that has been, I was going to say lucky then, but I don't agree with that word. They've worked hard. They're lucky. They're for whatever reason, they've come into their wealth. But that's where they, you know, advisors and planners like ourselves can be really helpful in helping them and in also helping them talk to their children.
What do you think, Michelle? Do you think there's been a shift across the generations, or that there are differences depending on wealth? Or do you think this is across all families and that it's a people and talking about money issue or something else?
I think it's very much, I think it is across all sectors, because where we've now had rising property prices, I think property is what drives the inheritance down to children. From a sort of more personal perspective, this is something I do deal with my clients on a regular basis because I do have personal experience of this. So my dad was very poorly with cancer. So we had planned everything so that everything would pass to my mum. All in place, everything was fine, but there was no will. And we knew that because we'd moved everything into my mum's name and everything else. So that was fine. And I'd had a conversation after my dad had passed with my mum, just a brief conversation in a coffee shop. You know, so what are your thoughts on what you want to do moving forward? What do you want to do? Do you want to stay in the house? Do you want to go on a big holiday? What sort of things do you want to do with what you have? And it was very honest. She said, I need to do my will. She said, but this is what I'm thinking. So we were talking and it was just a normal conversation. And I said, Mum, you've got, you know, time to plan things. So let's just keep talking and we can deal with that. Now, unfortunately, my mum passed away unexpectedly 12 weeks later without having made the will. But the situation is they had children from previous marriages. So the way things passed, because it was intestate, it passed to me. But because I'd had that conversation with my mum, I knew exactly what she wanted to do with that money. So this is where you see where money becomes a really big problem, because you have people going, well, that's yours, you've inherited it. And I said, no, that's, I know how it was to be split between me, my stepbrothers and my daughters and my niece. So that's what I did. So when I speak with clients now, this is probably one of the biggest things. It's telling your family, communicating, having that healthy communication as to what your wishes are and what you'd like them to do with it. My parents, their main property was their biggest asset. They didn't have a lot of savings. They wanted us to get on the property ladder with it. And the three of us have actually all put the money away to either buy a house or have bought a house as a deposit. So it is about just empowering your children and your family members to say, this is what I'd like you to do with it, and this is what you may get, but actually I'm still going to live my life in the meantime.
Yeah, yay. Thank you so much for sharing that, Michelle. I think that's really helpful for so many people, so thank you. There were two things that you said as you were sharing that, and the first one was, it just sounded so easy the way you sat down with mom in the coffee shop and had that conversation. And that's how money conversations should be, shouldn't they? They're the same as a conversation, not quite about the weather. I'm being like slightly too flippant there. But it doesn't have to be a big ordeal. It doesn't have to be a stress. It doesn't have to be a fallout. And then the fact that you heard her wishes, and even though things weren't put in place, those were carried out, which I think then, I'm going to come, I have two questions I've got, I'm going on two lines, Julie. So the first one is this idea of having a really gentle money conversation that's every day. And then the second one is, as the beneficiaries, that idea of, are we doing the right thing with the money based on that conversation, like to get onto the property ladder? So Julie, what would you say in terms of the money conversations? Because I thought Michelle did that beautifully. Is that what you say to people in terms of how to have a conversation about a family legacy, or is there another tip that you can share?
I think it very much depends on the amount of money and the people involved. And it's just, as I was listening to you talk there, I've got one client that's popping into my head straight away. And bear in mind that I think we're all in our 40s, aren't we? Right? Am I right? Yeah, we're all in our 40s. We've owned up to that one. Right? But if you're like me, you probably spend time talking to people in the 70s and 80s, and generational ideas about wealth and discussing money can be very different. So some of my 80-year-old clients are not going to find that as easy to do. And the one client I've got in mind happens to be very, very wealthy. She's got a lot of money, but she's always lived in an ex-council house from a very humble background and just happens to be incredibly wealthy now. And this money's going to get passed on to her niece. Her niece has no idea the amount of money that is there. And so I've been talking to her. It's probably been going on for a couple of years now, and just gently coaching her how to broach the conversation, because God help us if anything happened to her. Shall we call her? What should we call her? Let's call her Anna, right? Anna, let's say anything happened to Anna, right? The niece is not prepared for the amount of money that is about to rain down on her. She is not mentally prepared for it. And that's what I've been talking to Anna about over the last couple of years, is like, you need to help her prepare for it. And as we've been kind of having these conversations, what's come out is Anna's own views about wealth and her money. And one of the things that made her reluctant to discuss it is she was worried about how she would be judged. She was worried about the amount of money that she had changing how people thought about her and how they were around her. And that was the big barrier. So we've been slowly breaking that down. But I think quite often when we talk about inheriting money and the legacy and what have you, a lot of us are going to get the greedy stories coming to mind, aren't we? But I think, look at it from another perspective, some people are not prepared for the money they're about to receive. So having the conversations before puts them in the best position to be able to cope with that money. And it's an opportunity to bring the people together closer and just have much better, stronger relationships. I've rambled there, haven't I?
No, not at all. Not at all. And it made me think of a family that I help who, they are really struggling to have the conversations. And it's partly that dad in this particular case doesn't feel able to trust his children. So it's not that he doesn't want to share how much there is, and it's not that he doesn't want them to have it. Those are very kind of key, strong values for him. But he doesn't trust that they will do the right thing with it. One of them doesn't actually want to inherit at all. They've almost sort of seen wealth and emotionally responded into kind of a charity, don't give it to me, money's not very good. So there's a family who are trying to put an estate plan in place, but the emotional issues of, do I trust someone? I've worked really hard for this. Are they going to do the right thing? And then the beneficiary thinking, well, I don't want it. Maybe because they know dad doesn't trust them. Perhaps that's a key sticking point there. But despite that, they are at least trying. So they're going through that coaching and trying to put those plans in place. And I think that shows that the estate planning part that we as advisors do is enhanced hugely when that coaching piece sits alongside it too. Any thoughts there, Michelle, from you?
Yeah, I think the coaching fits in really well with this, because I think you've got parents who'll be looking at their children and their behaviour and what they do. And they will judge that the same as the children will judge what the parents do. And often they'll probably have the same limiting beliefs within themselves because they've inherited it from their parents. So deep down, the parents have had that effect on their children. So I think the working on it together is the only way they can try and align their values and pass on the legacy of actually what they would like them to achieve with that money, not necessarily do with it, but what they'd like them to achieve and how they'd like them to view it. And I think by having the conversations, and they do need to be gentle because some people just can't sort of deal with that at the time. It needs to be over time, which is why this estate planning, it needs to be years in action, really, because it's preparing your beneficiaries for potentially what's coming, the opportunities available to them, but also not being able to trust them, I think, with that money. And I think that's a really big thing. And if you have that, you can have the sort of perfect estate plan, if there is such a thing, as to how you want that to be in the future. So that then goes to their children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and you pass that down. But it comes back to always, isn't it? Communication is the biggest thing. Have the conversations about money so early on.
Yeah. And I heard you use that word inheritance there, both with the money and with the beliefs.
Yeah.
That they're not separate. They are two sides of the same coin. Emily, I know when we were talking on an earlier occasion, you had this lovely idea of giving before, which I'm going to pass to you. Do you think that fits in here?
I do have another question, actually, just in relation to the case that you were discussing. And it was in relation to the child that had said he or she did not want to inherit because he was sort of scared a bit by it all. Did that person have children?
So in that scenario, that is the daughter. The son's got the opposite attitude, because I think when we see something, the first response is do the same or do opposite. No children as of yet, so it may change there. But I think she feels it's almost, I don't think political is the right word, but a very conscious decision that she wants to live frugally and without money and not do what she's maybe seeing around her. Mm. So do you think the children piece would change? Do you think that changes for your clients, or any other thoughts on that?
I think it does. And this is just entirely my view, and other people may have different views, but I feel that, especially depending on the level of wealth that you have within your family, if there's a level of wealth that, which is a really nice life-changing amount, that would really help people of a younger generation do certain things like go to university, get on the property ladder and do all of that, then I think that in a way it's really very much a shame that that daughter would say, no, thank you, I don't want to inherit that now. Because even if they feel that they don't want that money in their life, there may come a time when their children may want it. And money doesn't have to be spent. I know this is something that you coaches talk about all of the time, in that some people do have this mindset, this sort of fear of money almost, and therefore they can't cope with it, and therefore they push it away in a sort of I don't deserve this kind of way. But even if they can find a space where they can compartmentalize that money and say, okay, I don't want that money, but I will take that into my estate or into my name, or I'll put it in trust or do something with it, but I will park it over there and I will let it grow. I will do whatever I need to do. I will be custodian of that pot until such time as somebody does want it. Because I think obviously people need to realize that the money that comes down the line keeps coming down the line until you stop that line. And if you stop it on your side, then it's all going to go down the other side. And just think how your children might feel then quite resentful of their cousins who are having an amazing life and going on nice holidays and not having to work three jobs to put themselves through university, and not, you know, that money would have somehow possibly found their way to them had the line not been stopped by the mother. So that's just something I would be mindful of when I'm talking to clients about whether or not they should accept that response of no, I don't want the money, and whether or not there's another way around it that can somehow ring fence it for the next generation that might want it.
I think as well that I think with this, going back to this particular lady, it's her recognizing that if she's got this very strong sense of purpose in and around her charity work, money doesn't necessarily have to stay in the family. It's about the purpose it has for you when you have that. The impact that she can have with that money on the people that she wants to help, they don't necessarily have to be family members, because once the money's out there, it still moves and it still comes back in one way or the other. So I think that what I heard you say there was really about a sense of purpose, but that purpose in your description was that the purpose was for it to go to the children. Just because there are no children doesn't mean that there aren't other great purposes that sit with that person. And I think that brings us back around to that question I had earlier of, is it right? That's the wrong question, because it's never right or wrong. What are your thoughts on the expectation from the person gifting to family members on what family members do with that money?
Oh.
I'm going to throw that one to Julie.
Oh,
I saw
her
eyebrows light up.
All right, so the expectation, so let's say it's me. So the expectations I have about the money that I'm passing on, I have zero expectations. I don't think this is just, I've had this conversation with, oh, it's one client, and she's got the will, and she's like a really big complicated family, but she's got no children, so it's all going to nephews and nieces and what have you. And she's like, but then they're married to them, and they've got a little one, so they need more. But her, I don't really see her that often, and him, if he turned up on doorstep, I wouldn't recognise him. And like, but what if she divorces him and he goes here? And it's just, she went through about three or four generations with all different contingency plans and what might happen. And like, I think what you need to accept is once you've given the money, it's gone. It's not yours anymore. So you, what I want you to do is take a step back and just ask yourself, how do you feel if you gift that money and they go and blow it on something stupid? Bear in mind, it's just something that might seem something stupid to you. And it's just, you need to reconcile yourself with, once you've given the money, it's gone. It's not yours anymore. You can't have any expectations. That's a really, that's quite a polarizing view, that, isn't it? Not everybody's going to agree with me there, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm actually with you, Julie. I think I have no expectation of what my children, as it would be, would do with an inheritance if I haven't spent it or gone into long-term care or had a...
We all know you spent it on gin, Catherine. The kids know you spent it on gin as well. You're such
right,
a gin darling.
I'm going to do what one of my clients did, just book on a permanent cruise as a sort of combination of care home and holiday.
That'd be cheaper.
So, I think it possibly does. So no, I don't think I have an expectation. I don't think that my dad would have an expectation of what I do. But again, I think there's an element of trust there. I wonder if I would be so laissez-faire, is that even the term for this time of the morning? If I was looking at one of my children thinking, I don't think they're going to do something sensible, whereas I can look at mine and think, they are who they are and they'll do what they do. So it's okay to be in that position whilst I've got no one to challenge it. Emily, I think maybe you've got a different perspective.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And I do think that it's an easier question to answer when you're talking about leaving money to children who are already in their 40s and 50s and 60s and, you know, already, you know, sensible, hopefully, you know, adults. But I took a phone call from a client yesterday who was doing exactly what I said people should do in putting their estate plan in place early doors. So he's in his 60s, he's in good health. So it's exactly what you should perhaps be doing in certain cases. But he wants to talk to me about putting some months of giving with a warm hand, which we can talk about in a minute. But he wants to give with a warm hand. But a lot of his grandchildren are still minors. They're still, you know, the youngest one, I think, was 5. So obviously there's a trust situation going to be required there to look after the money until they're of the right age. Now, of course, the question is, when is the right age? Because coming back to the purpose, that how they use that money, well, you know, putting the plan in place now is great, but he doesn't know what that 5-year-old's going to turn into. So he's quite concerned about what it might be used for. He would like it to be used for getting themselves into the property ladder for education, you know, all the, you know, sensible things in life. What he's very scared about, and I do think it's something that crosses people's minds, but, you know, he doesn't want his grandchildren to inherit, and it is a large amount of money, inherit a large amount of money at an age that they're not ready for it, and possibly at a time in their life that they're not in the right place. You know, he suggested, what if one of them had a drug problem? I don't want to be providing them with the ability to perpetuate a problem, you know. So I think every situation has to be taken on its own merits, and you've got to be quite sensible about what the ages are that these people might possibly inherit, and think about whether or not a trust situation might be the right answer in order to build in a little bit of regulation around how, when, how much people do receive that money. But yeah, it's not easy. Yeah.
Can I jump in here? Because I think that's a really common conversation, Emily, that us advisors have. And I think maybe part of our responsibility is to coach clients to be realistic. Because if you've got a guy who's 60 with a grandchild that's 5, and let's say your client hopefully is going to be here for, let's say, another 30 years, at which point the child will be 35. The world in 30 years' time, we can't begin to conceive of what it will look like. And while I would argue, I know that he's thinking today, me, I'm arguing 10 years ago, that, yeah, it made sense that if you were passing on money, you wanted to go towards university or buying a house or all those kind of things. And that's because that's the norm and that's what's expected. That's what we feel gets you off to a good start in life now. I think that's what happened 10 years ago. I don't think that's what counts now, but that's a different conversation. So the things that would be normal or that would be certain to get you a good, secure start in life in 30 years' time has not been invented yet. I don't think we can conceive of what that looks like. And I think it's just trying to help clients sort of rein in their expectations and be realistic about how much control they can actually have. And, you know, it's not his responsibility if the kid ends up becoming addicted to drugs and this money helps perpetuate that. It was already there, but we can't, we'll drive ourselves insane trying to think so far ahead in the future.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's those are some really good points. We can't conceive it. And I think if in that scenario, that is the scenario, that there's bigger issues at foot there, aren't there, in terms of the support that child needs. But I'm wondering if this comes back to just having really good financial education and conversations in the family so that we're aware of what we each see as good behaviour and therefore we can engender that trust. But Michelle, I noticed just as Julie was speaking, your face lit up, and I think that there's something really important that you want to share.
Yeah, I think it sort of going back to minors and putting my money away from minors and trying to set that age, you know, because I think people will say, should it be 18? Should it be 21? Should it be 25? And I think you can set it at whatever age you feel comfortable with. But I think it's really important that whoever you pick as trustees of that trust knows the children, knows how life might change for them and have the flexibility to be able to release that money earlier if circumstances change. And I think that's when we know life will change. So if those trustees are in tune with that child, know that child and has their best interests at heart, that money can be released earlier. So they don't have to keep that control until 25, because they may be in a situation where it's needed before that. But I think that's, again, that communication key with who you pick as trustees is so important. They need to know your family. They need to know the child. They need to know you, so that they can have that interaction and say, actually, things are different today. It's not like it was. You need that money. I think you should have it now. You're responsible enough to have it. But you know, eventually they will get that money. So I think that's where families, again, can work together. You could have a trustee in the family and one outside the family. So you've got an independent view from someone looking in and saying, I think you need to step in and maybe do something.
That's a really good point. So I think I'm going to just pass round the cafe. It's got my brain firing in all sorts of directions. I think there's lots more questions in and around this idea of should we have a legacy, how we manage it. So what I would love to hear is from any of our listeners, if you have a story, one that's kind of cropped to mind as you've heard the lady speaking this morning, or a question, then please drop that in. And I think what we'll do is revisit this topic. But before we wind up, I'd love to hear just your last thoughts, pearls of wisdom or advice to our listeners. I'm going to start with Julie.
Oh, God. Do you know what I've been trying to remember the whole time we've been having this conversation is? Right at the start, I was like, oh, bloody hell. I was meant to have got some money out of my mum's investment for her. We'd had a conversation over Christmas, and because, like, she got three grown-up kids. We don't need the money. We encourage her to spend it and do what she wants with it. So once we finished recording, unfortunately, I've saved for the whole of the episode. I need to go and get the money for my mum so she can go and enjoy her life. That's not really what you were looking for, was it?
I think it's very good to pop that on your post-it note.
It's on it.
Perfect. Emily, any thoughts? Any final thoughts?
I will just quickly tell you about one client who actually really broke my heart in a way, because she lost her husband unexpectedly a couple of years ago. She's sort of early 70s, but very fit and healthy, and certainly in a non-COVID world would be out there enjoying life a lot more than she is. But one thing that made me feel a bit sad was that she viewed the inheritance that she got from her husband as money that she was a custodian for to pass on to her children. And she herself didn't feel that she should be spending that pot. And I would say, as a sort of closing remark, is that if you inherit money, regardless of who it's from, it's because they wanted you to have it. And it's your job, it's your responsibility, if you like, to enjoy it, to almost carry on living because the other person didn't. And I think you shouldn't be ashamed about spending money that you inherited. It's not earned money, but in many respects it is, perhaps. But yeah, I think people should be enjoying their lives, bottom line.
Oh, thank you, darling. And Michelle, last words.
Yeah, I think in terms of, you know, inheritance and people's expectations, I think we need to view anything that we do receive. It's not just money, it's a legacy of their love and their trust in you, because they've left it to you, because they love you. And I think that's how we need to view it, and you live your life as you wish to.
Oh, that's lovely, Michelle. That's lovely, Michelle. It's going to make my last piece of information sound really black and white compared to that beautiful statement. I was just on practicalities in terms of have the conversations. Even if you are, doesn't matter where you are in the family, I think there's a way that you can initiate it, and that there are things that you can do to express your wishes, because really that's what you're doing. There's the estate planning, but you've got wishes. There are ways that you can include an expression of wishes alongside a will, potentially alongside a trust, that guides people. It's not necessarily an obligation or an instruction. It is an expression of something that you would like to see happen. So that's everything from us. We hope you've enjoyed that episode. All that remains for me to do is thank the lovely panel that joined us this morning, Michelle Lamble, Emily Poole and my lovely co-host, Julie Flynn, who has a task to do now with her post-it note.
I'm on it, Mum.
Thank you, ladies.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed the show? Then subscribe and catch new episodes every week. Likewise, we'd love it if you leave us a glowing review or share with your friends to help us reach and empower as many women as we can. We'd love to hear from you, so do come and join us in the Women and Money Cafe Facebook group. Please note, all information in this podcast is information and guidance only and does not constitute financial advice.